Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
Welcome to another Joy 94.9 podcast.
In this Joycast, you'll hear a summary of the weekly program. Due to copyright restrictions, the music has been edited out to make this Joycast possible.
For more information about the music played during the show, please visit the blog at joy.org.au/The Fool and the Opera.
Welcome to The Fool and the Opera, the show where it all comes together in the end, just like any production of The Rake's Progress during the onstage orgy. Look that one up, you'll get up later. Thanks for joining me. I'm your show host. I'm Dan Vo, The Fool, or if you're Mr. T, just like he says, I pity the fool. Thanks very much to Bo for another brilliant episode of Gaze of Our Lives, and also to Murray for the news. Coming up after my program at 7 is, of course, Bent Notes, so please do stick around. It will be a great night. During the show, if you'd like to say hello or send in your comments and feedback, you can do so by SMSing 0427JOY949 or emailing onair@joy.org.au. I've also got Brendan on the desk, so you can give him a call, 9699 2949. Today, we've got a hooker nun, a womanizer, and a dead man walking. Plus, John Pringle will reflect on 41 years of being on the opera stage and talking about his experiences as Don Giovanni and Leporello. We'll also play a few tracks from Massenet's Werther and Thais, and I've got it all passed to the Met in HD screening of Thais at Nova Cinema Carlton to give away. So stick around, it's going to be a fun little show, and plus there'll be plenty of opera, as you can probably guess. Now, let's start off with a bit of rock from Falco. So here you go. Enjoy. You're on The Fool and the Opera with on Joy 94.9, and it's me, Dan Vo, here with you on a Sunday evening. Now, that was, of course, the 1986 hit by Austrian pop outfit Falco, Rock Me Amadeus, inspired by the film Amadeus, a film about Mozart, the man, the music, and the madness. The film was considered a wild exaggeration of Mozart. Many would say, no way would he have been that crass or vulgar. No way would he partaken in such debaucherous and devious activities. Well, it's sometimes hard to separate fact from fiction. But one story I know that is true about Mozart is he wrote the overture to Don Giovanni with a hangover. It's quite incredible considering that the Don Giovanni, which in Italian is Il dissoluto impunito ossa il Don Giovanni, or literally The Rake Punished or Don Giovanni, has been called by many as a musically perfect operatic piece. It's a masterpiece. So it just goes to show that a musical genius will be still amazing even when they're not on top of the game. This opera, Don Giovanni, has had a significant and lasting effect on Western music, and the great Don Giovanni and Da Ponte opera, which they did together, is a very popular standard in the opera repertoire. So the music is good, but what about the story? Maybe that's a bit of another thing altogether, because certainly it is a little bit of its time. It relies on supernatural themes that these days, well, we're just a little bit wiser than that, aren't we? The opera is about a womanizer and a host from hell, literally. A quick recap. Don Giovanni sneaks into the bedroom of the beautiful Anna, wanting to be her to be his latest conquest. The Commendatore, her father, appears and stops him from doing the dastardly deed. Don Giovanni kills him and flees. So murder there, there's one death toll, adding to the death toll, there's one count. Later, Don Giovanni finds the statue of the Commendatore in the graveyard and insults him and invites him to dinner. The twist in the story is later the Commendatore does actually turn up to dinner and reciprocates the invite by dragging him, Giovanni, kicking and screaming to a barbecue in hell. So there you go, two on the death count now. So you'll have a chance to check out Don Giovanni this year when the Victorian Opera put it on in March with Samuel Dundas as the dashing Don Giovanni. Giovanni is my favourite opera. Well, one of my favourite operas. It's just when I saw it, it was what made me fall in love with opera. And I had the honour of talking with John Pringle when he retired last year, who, among other things, really etched his name into stone as a wonderful interpreter of Mozartian operas. And what you're about to hear now is the highlights of the interview with John Pringle. You're on The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9. John Pringle is an award-winning baritone who sings with great charm and warmth. His wonderful voice has sang out from the stages of Australia, Europe and the USA. His no doubt desirable lips have kissed those of countless divas, including Dame Joan Sutherland, Sumi Joan and Emma Matthews. I'm very honoured to be speaking with him today about his long and distinguished career in opera. Thanks for joining me, John.
It's a pleasure, Dan.
Well, it sounds like you've had quite a bit of fun on the stage over the years.
Well, from what you just said, obviously.
It seems that this sort of heartthrob idea is a sort of a theme throughout your career.
Yeah, that's an oddie in some ways, because when you're talking heartthrob stuff in opera, you usually mean with tenors. You know, the baritones are usually the very very sensible guys who try to counsel a tenor not to rush off with the beautiful heroine, you know, otherwise he'll get himself into some sort of dreadful fix. And of course, he's always ignored, and the worst happens, and the baritone just stands by and shakes his head.
In the 70s, you and Anson Austin were very popular as Rodolfo and Marcello.
Well, it was that. Yeah, we were both leading men, so to speak, in those days, but Anson was far and away the one they wanted to hear, you know, or see. In fact, there was a wonderful occasion when we were playing a school's matinee. I mean, and they weren't very young kids, they were all mostly teenage girls around the age of 14 or 15, and somebody came round afterwards and said, look, would you mind meeting some of the audience? And we said, oh, no, that'd be really nice. We, you know, sort of encourage the kids to enjoy opera. So they said, okay, just a moment. And the door flung open. It was a knock on the door. It was flung open, and I was squashed against the wall, like one of those cartoon characters, you know, as the girls all stampeded into me dancing.
Well, let's go back to 1962. You were in your mid-20s at that time.
Yeah.
And opera didn't come until a little bit later.
I worked as a pharmacist for 5 years. But while I was working as a pharmacist, I used to follow singing as a hobby. Got into some amateur opera performances with the Victorian Opera Company and some stuff at university, doing Gilbert and Sullivan at the Union Theatre. A few things like that. Just getting the feel for the stage, and that's where I got the feeling that I'd really rather like to do it for a job.
Mm. Do you remember that moment when you decided that opera was going to...
Yeah, I actually have a memory of a particular moment, and it was my first non-Gilbert and Sullivan opera on the stage. It was The Bartered Bride, of all things, of Smetana. Wonderful, wonderful opera. And I was doing Ketzel, The Marriage Broker, and I don't know, I was doing a scene and really enjoying myself, and it just flashed through my mind. I thought, gee, I feel really happy here, really at home here. I'd love to do this for the rest of my life, and that's pretty much what's happened.
Was opera something that you grew up being surrounded with?
Well, yes and no. I didn't go to the opera at all, really. I used to go to symphony concerts and chamber concerts and things like that, and piano recitals, but I was interested in opera because there was an interest in music in our house, and you know, the guy down the road used to lend me opera recordings, one of which, I must say, was the great Tosca performance with Maria Callas and Tito Gobbi. You know, that alerted me to how wonderful opera could be. So it was hovering around, and I used to go and see performances later on in my 20s. Late 20s, I used to go and watch what the company that I eventually joined.
Well, let's talk about Don Giovanni very quickly. In 74, sure. You played Don Giovanni. For a performer who was new to the opera world, that must have been a huge highlight.
It was, yeah, absolutely. Way back before I became a singer, but was very keen on classical music, I shared a house with a guy who was an optometrist, and he also shared my love of music, and we'd have parties, you know, sort of thing young men do. We'd have girls along, and we'd drink a fair bit of booze, and then late at night, we'd stick on something really heavy. It used to drive people away a lot of time. So if it wasn't Goethe Dämmerung, you know, five-hour Wagner opera, more often than not, it was Don Giovanni. And I used to listen to this and think, this is the most amazing music, which it was, of course, and still is. And I thought, oh, gee, it must be wonderful to be in this thing. And then I came to do the role of Don Giovanni itself during the first season of the Opera House. So I was the first Don Giovanni in the Sydney Opera House. And that in itself was exciting. It was a production by John Bell, and it was conducted by a great Mozart conductor, John Pritchard. Wonderful cast, Jan Carden, Arlene Hannan, people like that. And it became a staple of my repertoire, and I did a couple of productions. And I used to sit in my room in one of my few breaks and hear Leporello being sung, the other great baritone role in the opera, and think, oh, gee, it must be wonderful to sing in that sextet, blah, 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 blah. And a few years later, I was doing Leporello. So I've been doubly lucky with Don Giovanni because I've sung essentially the whole opera, apart from the soprano arias and the tenor arias. I've been involved in either role in the whole piece, and, you know, it's like double whammy, really. This is John Pringle. You're listening to The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9.
This is Joy 94.9, and that was La Mano with John Pringle and Isabel Buchanan. There we will intertwine our hands, basically. Don Giovanni is seducing the peasant girl Zerlina, and it's in old operatic lore, when a man is marrying a girl, apparently the lord who owns the land on which the man lives can still claim his new bride on the night before the marriage. And that's what Don Giovanni is doing there. He, in that song, he is claiming his, he's staking his claim. And I'm not sure exactly where he'll be sticking his stake exactly, but I'm too innocent to know those sort of things. Adam Stobbs has texted in with a message saying that Mozart, surprisingly, was also the second best billiards player in Europe. And he used to compose his music on his billiard table by rolling around the balls on the table and letting the rhythm of the balls colliding frequently inspire his rather rhythmic figures in music. And there's also a theory that Don Giovanni is Mozart's guilt trip for defying his father, which completely dominated him. I've heard that as well. I'm not, I don't quite understand how that all comes together. But if someone knows, let me know. 0427JOY949 is the text. Email onair@joy.org.au if you know the story behind that. Now, Don Giovanni, I saw at the end of the Melbourne Spring Festival in 2007. And as I said before, it's what made me fall in love with opera. The final scene when the statue comes to dinner is a jaw-droppingly good moment. The two D minor death chords play and the two columns just collapse on stage and just crumbles into dust as the ghostly statue makes his appearance. And there's just something about the music and the setting. It just had me on the edge of my seat with excitement. And I also like to tell everybody the fact that Teddy Tahu Rhodes looks good with his top off and was topless in the scene had nothing to do with my excitement. I will say that the whole theatre must have been full of men and gay men and women because the gasps that went up around the room, it was clearly audible. John Pringle was the Leporello in the performance that I saw, and Leporello is the manservant and dog's body to Giovanni. And in this particular performance, John was just absolutely amazing, and I couldn't help but sort of gush and tell John that when I interviewed him. And it was just an amazing night, and the family was there, and they were applauding, and it was just a beautiful moment in opera, I think. So you're about to hear the second part of the highlights with John Pringle. Remember that later there is a double pass to see the Met in HD screening of Massenet's Thais at Nova Cinema Carlton. So stick around for that. But for now, the interview with John Pringle. You're on The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9. Well, to be honest, Don Giovanni was probably the first opera that I'd seen live with you as Leporello. And that was what hooked me in opera, I think. It was just an amazing opera.
Yeah, I hope it doesn't sound too twee, but my feeling is that to be given the opportunity to sing in Don Giovanni or in The Master Singers or in Figaro or, you know, Madame Butterfly or something is an honour because they're pinnacles of Western art, and to be involved in them is just such a bonus.
Now, you've mentioned a few Mozart characters there, Giovanni Leporello. You've also done Almaviva, Papageno. Mozart features quite heavily in your career.
Yeah. A very important part of my repertoire. I've got something like 8 roles, and, you know, in each of those great Mozart operas, I've done the 2 baritone roles. And, you know, in years past, it was the younger man part, and then it became the older man part. And sometimes they even went back to the other guy, and you would have to assume that he was somebody of an indeterminate age.
What do you get out of Mozart, John?
The Mozart operas are wonderfully composed. The three that have libretti by Da Ponte, that's Figaro, Giovanni, and Così fan tutte, have terrific text. Mozart was lucky, in a sense, that he met Da Ponte, and that Da Ponte was sort of a genius in his own right. And then when Mozart got hold of the words, he just added dimensions to them that few people could manage, so that you end up with these wonderful masterpieces. And that, you know, there's this whole area of the repertoire, the Mozart area, plus Magic Flute, which is a different style of piece, but they're part of the canon, what I call the canon, the sort of 40 operas or whatever it is that constitute the repertoire that every decent opera company must have.
You've been quoted as saying the business has become so difficult in a way to keep it going financially. People are just so serious now that they sometimes don't have time for a bit of fun.
Yes, I don't remember saying those exact words, but okay. I probably did, you know, because it's pretty much my thinking. When I started out, it was a small company. We didn't do many operas. It was a fairly shoestring affair. We were, you know, poorly paid because there wasn't that much money with which to pay us. It was nobody's fault except perhaps the governments at the time. The government subsidy in those days represented a much higher proportion of income than it does now. Mm. But, in the intervening years, business sponsorship and all that sort of thing has come in. So there we are. And we charge a lot more for the tickets anyway. Opera is treated everywhere in the world much the same as any other business. There's a sort of a bottom line. There's no profit motive involved as such. You know, they're not paying shareholders, but it's a company that turns over, I don't know what it is now, but it was $60 million or something a couple of years back. Mm. And if the company makes a few hundred thousand, it's done all right. So it's a fine line between sinking and swimming, and this is the same everywhere. Even in countries like Germany, where the government subsidy is higher than it is here. So you're constantly aware that you need to produce something that people are going to like. You need to have quite a good wodge of your Bohemes and Carmens and things, doing quite a few performances of them, so that you've got bottoms on seats. I wouldn't like to be a young singer starting out now. It must be damned hard, because there are now very few full-time jobs with the company. The style of employment has changed. And I think that is also symptomatic of the way the money's handled, that people are given much shorter-term contracts. And there are a few of them, so that if you're a singer of some quality starting out, you've really got to work very hard to find work to keep body and soul together. So some singers go overseas and try their luck there. Others have to go around Australia singing with us, singing with regional companies, and even then it must be very difficult to keep body and soul together, I think. Maybe some of them do a bit of teaching.
Well, it sounds like when you first started out, it sounds like the company that you were involved with was more like a family.
It was. Yeah, it was exactly that. Everyone knew everyone very well. And on payday, which was done in cash-type money in those days, you know, you got an envelope with your salary in it. We'd all meet there on Friday at the same time, and then we'd go up to the pub in King's Cross and have a couple of drinks and be social. And because it was a smaller company, we didn't do many pieces. A lot of us were in most of the operas, so you saw people a lot. Now the company does 20-something operas a year. There are many more people being used, each person less, and you can go a year without seeing someone who's really quite a good friend.
Looking back at the family, do you have people that you remember working with who you really enjoyed working with?
Oh, yes. Yeah, well, there are loads of them, of course. But I mean, the obvious ones, well, I shouldn't, it's not a very good word because, in fact, they're more than obvious. Dame Joan Sutherland, one of the greatest singers ever. Tito Gobbi. Felicity Lott overseas, and some terrific people, really. Most of the colleagues I've worked with have been very good. And, Simi Joe, Susan Graham, they're just terrific people. Neil Warren Smith in the early days was a good friend. John Shaw, Anson Austin, I mentioned, Joan Carden. I mean, the trouble is, if I keep going on, I'm going to leave somebody out. and then I'll feel bad about it. But all those wonderful people, Heather Begg, Rosina Raisbeck, Robert Gard, a dear friend. Robert, I don't know if you've heard this, but Robert Gard, who's now in his 80s, was in my last performance of Macropolis Secret a week and a half ago.
All right.
Here in Sydney. And he and I were in the cast 12 years earlier. Robert was in my very first performance 41 years before.
Oh, fantastic.
And that was Deflatormouse in Melbourne. Robert was the dashing young Eisenstein, and I was the crusty old, at the age of 28, I was the crusty old prison governor, Franck. So that's where I made my debut. And here was Robert closing the circle for me 41 years later, and it was wonderful, just wonderful. And he's one of my dearest colleagues.
Now that the opera is over, where to from here, John?
I actually want to go and learn German properly.
Okay.
And there are lots of things to do around here. I'm at home. Lots of jobs to do with my hands. I love working with my hands. I want to fix a few things. In general, I keep going. I think that's probably what's keeping me relatively young.
Well, thank you very much for joining me, John.
It's a pleasure, Dan.
The Fool and the Opera, where we're totally addicted to bass.
A Statue Comes to Dinner on Joy 94.9. This is The Fool and the Opera. I'm your host, Dan Vo. Thank you for joining me. Cena Teco, one of my favourite arias to sing when I'm in the shower, which is kind of, I think just deep down inside, I'm a bass waiting to come out. That was Mario Luperi as the Statue, Bryn Terfel as Don Giovanni, and Michele Petrucci as Leporello. Before that, you heard our interview highlights with John Pringle from, he retired from Opera Australia later last year. My dear audio producer, Jed Gilbert, is back today, so this week we'll be able to catch up with all the program summary podcasts and extended interview podcasts from the last weeks of last year and the early weeks of this year, which we've all missed. So joy.org.au/thefoolandtheopera. By the end of the week, it should all be there for you, ready to go. Now, after the seriousness of that track, I wanted to play you something that's a little bit lighter and a little bit sillier. Victor Borg is a hilarious comedian called the Clown Prince of Denmark. English was a new language for him, and his comedy routines are based about the little idiosyncrasies of the English language, which I have not yet mastered. He's best known for his revolutionary inflationary language and his phonetic punctuation. I'll post a few things on the blog so you can have a listen to those. In the meantime, he was also a brilliant pianist, and he can make the most tragic things like death in an opera funny. So this is Victor Borg with a Mozart opera.
Anyway, her father's very mad, and he decides that she must die. She's a very obedient daughter, so she dies, and that's the end of the opera. Now you hear the conductor's footsteps when he enters the pit. You think he's limping. Oh, no, he walks sideways. Here's the overture.
You're on The Fool, the Opera on Joy 94.9, and that was Victor Borg, the Clown Prince of Denmark, with a Mozart opera, called because it is written by Mozart. Now, it's giveaway time, and I have a double pass to the Met in HD screening of Massenet's Thais for you to win. I've been told that the lead roles in this particular opera are so difficult that it's only been performed in the last 30, once in the last 30 years at the Met. So it's your chance to see quite a rarity. Another rarity I'm not sure if you'll see in this production or not is a wardrobe malfunction. That's right, more than a century before Justin Timberlake and Janet Jackson had their scandal at the 1894 premiere in Paris, the soprano singing the title role as the hooker-turned-nun in Thais exposed her bosom at the end of Act 1. We don't know if it was deliberate, but it did catch people's attention. The stunningly beautiful soprano Renee Fleming is in the lead role of this particular production with the Met, and well, if there is a wardrobe malfunction in this production, I'm sure many wouldn't mind. The opera is all about discreet religious eroticism and is certainly worth a look-see. So, double passes to the Met in HD screening of Massenet's Thais for you to win. It's this Thursday at 11:30 a.m. so just take the day off work. 9699 2949 is the number to call. That's 9699 2949. We'll give it to the first caller there. Meanwhile, to give you a bit of nice music to listen to while you dash for the phones, it's the dreamy meditation interlude from Thais. You're on The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9. Thank you. Barbara Jane Gilby on the violin with the Tasmanian Symphony Orchestra. Some sensuous and sensitive music there for you on a Sunday, perhaps even a little semi-religious, so that we can all feel a little bit better about this very holy of days. Hell, if a courtesan can be absolved of her sins and be forgiven, I'm sure there's hope for the rest of us sinners. Though I'm not so sure about Sundays, considering what's happening next week with Midsummer Carnival Day. It's going to be the 21st, and the festival comes of age. And Joy, of course, will be there with our bells and whistles on. In fact, this year, we are taking the stage in a big way, with all your Joy presenters acting as hosts on the Midsummer stage. I've got to say, the lead-up to Midsummer here at the station is incredibly exciting. The staff and volleys sort of run around like headless chooks. And for those of you who don't know, I'm also the marketing manager here, and in the days leading up to Midsummer, it's just all about meeting print deadlines and production deadlines and making sure we have everything ready. So one of the things that we're doing this year to celebrate the 21st of Midsummer and the 15th of Joy is we've commissioned a giant timeline of the station's history, from the first words to the first outside broadcast to the recent move. You know, I've been here with the station for about almost five years now. This is my fifth year, in fact, and I'm simultaneously the youngest staff member and also the longest serving staff member, which is a bizarre thing to be. But in the time that I've seen the station, it's just sort of grown from strength to strength, and it was really quite emotional to go through all the old files and all the old stories, and to see the hard work, the blood and the sweat and the tears of Joy that have been put in to make the station be what it is today. So it is amazing to see. So please do come on down and check it out at Midsummer next week at Alexandra Gardens. So my thanks to volunteers Shane, Martin, Sean, Chris, Tim and staffer Stephen and Jade for helping put together that timeline. We're also going to be releasing our first Here There magazine, which is a spin-off of our Here Here magazine, which David Lim from Different Strokes is out there at the moment in the offices, sort of putting together the final touches as we speak. So it's going to be a great little mag, so please do come on down and check it out. It really shows the sort of harmonious relationship between Joy and Midsummer over the years. So it'll be something that, in fact, when we got our first full-time license, our first broadcast was quite suitably at Midsummer in 2002. So there you go. So congratulations to both organisations for reaching such important ages, and may you live long and prosper. So come on down next week, Alexandra Gardens. It's going to be Carnival Day and Midsummer Festival kicks off. So please come on down and check us out there. And after next week, because we'll be broadcasting live from there, at 6 p.m. the show will finish there and we're going back to the studio. But what we'll be doing here is we'll be putting together a party mix of opera tracks for you to enjoy. So I can't believe I just put the two words together, but I did. So there you go. A party mix of opera next week. So in the meantime, if you are in Sydney in March, you'll be able to check out Werther, which is another Massenet opera. So the details on the blog tonight at joy.org.au/thefoolandtheopera. This is Andrea Bocelli with Pourquoi mi rivela from Werther. You're on The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9. Thank you so much for joining me today. Now remember, there's plenty of updates throughout the week at joy.org.au/thefoolandtheopera. This has been The Fool and the Opera. Join me again next week when we have our party mix of opera. And as Massenet would say, same Fledermaus time, same Fledermaus channel.
Thanks for listening to the Joycast of The Fool and the Opera from Joy 94.9 Community Radio. You can find more Joycasts and the program blog at joy.org.au/thefoolandtheopera. The Fool and the Opera is produced by Dan Vo and Jed Gilbert, thanks to the support of Joy's sponsors and members. Please help support it by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with joy.